Welcome everyone to Essex Church, the home of Kensington Unitarians. I had the most vivid dream last night that I stood up here and said those words and then looked down at my notes and discovered that was the only sentence I had on the sheet. But I'm sure we've all had dreams like that. Some opening words. Come down off the ladder, wash out that paintbrush, shake the sand out of your shoes. Get up off your muddy knees and give the garden a morning off. Fold up the newspaper, turn off the coffee maker, close up your diary, already filled with appointments and times and people and places that claim you. This church is ready for you to create its spirit, to generate its warmth, to kindle its light. This church is ready for you to make a community, to create beauty, to bend it towards justice, to serve its ideals. This church is ready for you to be here, honouring our past, enjoying our present, and dreaming our future. This is your church. Here we are home. Let us begin. I'm going to light our chalice, as is done in Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist churches all over the world. As one small flame fills a whole room with light, so may we radiate hope, courage, and good cheer in our homes, in our worship, and in all the corners of our world. Right, there's an Indian-born journalist who writes for The Guardian, called Sunny Handel, and this is a piece he wrote, which is called From Now On, I'm English and Not British. In letting our perceptions of English identity be defined by the far right, ethnic minorities miss out on shaping what it means. The first time I encountered a white fascist on an internet message board I used to run, I pointed out that I was born in London and had every right to be in the country. He replied, "Just because a dog is born in a stable doesn't make it a horse." In a bizarre way, I've become fond of that insult over the last 10 years, for reasons that will soon become clear. Bear with my personal stuff, if you can. It's somewhat necessary. It's rare that our sense of identity remains static. Mine is a constantly mutating body of ideas. For as long as I can remember, I've called myself a British Asian. Before that, questions of identity didn't come up much. It started at university because I was suddenly exposed to a range of cultures and ideas that made me question how I saw myself. At the same time, an unprecedented explosion of British Asian culture was taking place, enveloping me and my friends. Bangra music gigs multiplied across the UK until they were dime a dozen every night of the week. Bollywood film screenings sprang up everywhere. Asian students started celebrating religious and cultural festivals, Diwali, Eid and Vaisakhi, and dressing in elaborate Indian suits. We were the first Asian generation born and bred in the UK, and once we got to university, we were no longer afraid to express our Asian side. British Asian was a neat term because it was secular and it was vague on the ethnic side. I didn't like to call myself British Indian because I felt a sense of cultural solidarity with Pakistanis and Bangladeshis. It was also vague on the British side, because no one could really define what that meant. It signalled a fusion of two cultures, which is how most of us lived our lives. There is one question, however, that I was always uneasy on: national identity. For me, British identity had connotations of far-right nationalism. So while I was happy calling myself British, I still felt uncomfortable being nationalistic about it. Englishness was even worse. My perception, and that of many of my peers, was that being English was about being white. We would never be welcome in that club, so we stuck to British. So I think it's time to embrace the idea of Englishness, and from now on, I am an Englishman. Why the change, you may ask? Partly, the National Front activist convinced me. I told him I would call myself British whether he liked it or not. More recently, I started thinking, why not take it further? Why not also try and reclaim the idea of being English? I realised that I, along with many of my peers of all colours, had let our perceptions of identity be defined by the far right. I've come to reject that approach. I choose to be English, whether racists like it or not. Second, the idea of Englishness is becoming stronger in popular culture. Football leads the way, and it's a useful vehicle because it is an inclusive, multiracial sport. We can unite around the view that the England team are a huge disappointment at the World Cup, and we don't have to get all political about it. The danger for ethnic minorities is that we can become out of kilter with public opinion by associating this increasing Englishness as far-right racism rather than simply an expression of nationalism. People fly the English flag because they want to express their love for their country. They're comfortable with the multiracial Britain. They're proud of Andy Cole, Mark Ramprakash, Natasha Danvers, Amir Khan, Kelly Holmes, and many more. The meaning of Englishness has changed, and we have to accept that. By not joining in with attempts to shape what it means, we leave that space to the far right. My last reason was simply pragmatic. I like this country. I probably couldn't live out in the countryside, which is too slow for me, but I love London. I don't like any other place as much. I'm not going to get all US-style jingoistic about it, but if people criticise it, I inevitably get defensive, which makes England my home and which makes me English. Almost exactly 2,000 years ago, Tacitus reflected on the difference between Britain and Germany. He wrote, "The people of Germany appear to be indigenous and free from intermixed with foreigners, either immigrants or casual visitors. The Germans have never intermarried with foreign nations. They are a pure, unmixed race, like none but themselves. Who were the original inhabitants of Britain, whether they were indigenous or immigrants, is, as usual, among barbarians, little known. Their physical characteristics vary. The red hair and large limbs of the Scottish people," Jim here could model the red hair and large limbs of the Scottish people, "point clearly to a German origin. The dark complexion of the West Country people, their curly hair, and the fact that Spain is the opposite shore to them," perhaps not a geographer, "are evidence that Spaniards previously crossed over and occupied these parts. Those from the south of England resemble the French, either because they are related or because in countries so close together, climate has produced similar physical qualities. The sky in Britain is obscured by continual rain and cloud." He wasn't really a fan. But it's noticeable that even then, Britain was a mongrel place, and England was seen as more so than the other British countries. And this is a process that has continued during the subsequent 2,000 years. I don't know if there's any country in the world that has such an ambiguous relationship with their country and their flag as England. We just are very uncomfortable with the whole concept of national identity in a way that would be puzzling to people from other countries. Perhaps it has something to do with our lost empire and the difficulty of coming to terms with the fact that our status in the world is so different from what it used to be. 150 years ago, Cecil Rhodes said that, "I contend that we are the first race in the world, and that the more of the world we inhabit, the better it is for the human race." He also described being born English as winning first prize in the lottery of life. On the whole, there were only two occasions we ever see the English flag. Actually, I did think originally of putting an English flag here in place of our chalice banner, and I thought people might see it through the window and just go home when they saw it, so I didn't. We put up the English flag maybe if there's a major international football or sporting fixture, and racists use it. Those are the only two occasions we ever see it, in a way that must be very baffling to people of other nationalities. I've heard people say, as Sunny Hundle identifies in his article, that the suggestion that immigrants may be British, but that they can never be English, trying to define Englishness in terms of ancestry. And as Sunny Hundle says, "It's time to embrace the idea of Englishness. From now on, I am an Englishman. So who should be allowed to think of themselves as English?" Some years ago, I was employed to collect census forms from door to door and to help people to fill them in. And when we were being trained, we came to the question about ethnic origin. And we were told that we're not allowed to contradict what people told us, for reasons which I'm sure you can imagine. If somebody, as they commonly did, said they wanted to tick the box that said white English, we were not supposed to laugh derisively and say, I don't think so. And I'm a great believer in self-defining, as with gender. If somebody says they prefer to be described as she, it's not for us to scoff at them and say, well, you look like a he to me. People are what they choose to be, and I think that's just fundamental manners. And the same applies to nationality. If somebody feels English, if they wish to identify themselves as English, as far as I'm concerned, that's what they are, whether they were born here or not, and whether they live here or not. Now, Norman Tebbit, in the days of when he was a member of Margaret Thatcher's cabinet, tried to force the concept of the cricket test on our ideology. He said that if somebody wants to be accepted as English, then in a cricket match between the English cricket team and the team representing their country of origin, if they don't cheer for the English team, they are not English. Now, I think that's a desperately narrow and mean-spirited view. People are perfectly capable of feeling two different and overlapping loyalties. Who, for example, is allowed to celebrate if Amir Khan wins a match? Pakistani people, English people, Pakistani English people, all of the above. Why should we want to limit the number of people who would take pride in such a thing? Now, my father takes an interest in his local football team, the not very terrifying Histon United in Cambridgeshire. A couple of years ago, Histon United, rather unaccountably, beat Leeds United in a match. And shortly afterwards, Leeds United beat Manchester United. So my father was going around boasting to people that obviously Histon United had proved they were a better team than Manchester United. And when I posted this, what I thought rather endearing little story in an internet discussion, you always meet the nicest people in these places, somebody came back to me and said, is he actually a player for Histon United? So I said, well, no, he's actually 86 years old and really not an athlete. So they said, well, how can he possibly think that's anything to boast about? He's not a player. He didn't contribute towards their victory. And it did make me think he had fundamentally misunderstood the nature of belonging and identity. Being proud of a football team, or of a school, a college, your town, your church, or your country, does not mean you're taking personal credit for whatever they have achieved or whatever qualities they possess. Any more than if a member of your family won some major award, you're not taking credit if you're proud that a member of your family has won an award. It's just as you're proud of your family because you identify with your family, you belong to your family, you can equally well be proud of your country. I'm proud, for example, if I think of some of our beautiful countryside, and if I was standing looking over Coniston Water at sunset, and there were people of different nationalities also seeing it, I would feel proud that it was mine. That doesn't mean I feel that I made Coniston Water or the sunset or the combination of the two. It's mine, and it's shared with everybody else who has that feeling of identity. So in my view, being English is an open invitation. And it's admirable to feel proud of your country of birth, the country where you live, the country you identify with. We can define that pride as patriotism, and if we do, we're reclaiming that word from people who think nationality is an exclusive club, and that pride in one country must necessarily mean contempt for others. But liberal inclusive patriotism has responsibilities as well as rights. We are not entitled to say my country right or wrong. It's no more admirable to feel unquestioning loyalty to a country than it would be to conceal the proceeds of a bank robbery on the grounds that it was committed by your brother. Liberal Democrat blogger George Potter wrote, I am a liberal who campaigns to try and change things to make the country better. For me, that is what patriotism is about, and I am proud to be a patriot. So I have ended up with a three-part definition of a patriot. It is someone who identifies as belonging in some positive sense to a country. It is someone who feels pride in some aspects or achievements relating to that country. And it is someone who cares enough about a country to work towards honest and positive values in that country. And one final thought. Inclusion means the inclusion of all, and not the inclusion of all who are like me. Let us go in peace, to live together in harmony, to see beauty in everything, to know wonder in each passing moment, and to walk gently with each other. Amen.